Thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings from Faith Radio. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. And I won't worry about tomorrow. I'm trusting. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the second hour of Faith Radio Mornings here on the 11th of October. I'm your host for the show, Dr. Peter Kapsner, and I am joined in studio by Paul Perreault and Logan Rausch and Rachel Sutton that do such a great job behind the scenes each day, bringing guests from around our country to talk with us about the relevant news items and special topics of the day from a Christian perspective. Really love the balance that they bring into the program, different perspectives, people doing different things in life, many of them experts in their field. And they all share that same Christian faith. And so we'll try to do this new show from the perspective of following Jesus, not being anchored to maybe being a Democrat or a Republican, though those things matter. But at the end of the day, there's only one kingdom that will remain. It is the eternal kingdom of Jesus Christ. And so we'll stay anchored to that and tethered to God as we walk through the news headlines of the day. And, of course, we love it when you're part of the show as well. And so if you want to call or to text at any time at 877-933-2484, and maybe you have a question you'd like to ask one of our guests or a comment to follow up with on something that they had to say, we'd certainly welcome any and all input. Well, I referenced in the top of the first hour that when I got into my car this morning and was driving into the studio, I was greeted by a bit of surprise, and that was that there was snow falling as I was driving in. I have to admit, I was not prepared for that. I wondered if it was November or December, and I began to sort of whine a little bit to myself about, you know, driving through snow and what trouble that all is, only to find out that to our friends in North Dakota that are listening this morning, you got far more snow than the little dusting I was driving through. I understand there are 6 to 18 inches falling across the state of North Dakota yesterday. What a huge weather event that is. And it brought into mind, you know, are things changed? Are we close to the rapture? Are these the horsemen that are riding? And so I wanted to bring Chris Martin of millennialevangelical.com in early to the program and get his perspective on this, because I need some help sorting through. Is this just a normal weather event, or is this portend something more sinister? Good morning, Chris.
Hey, good morning. How are you? I'll do my best to provide my meteorological services. Good.
Well, you know, you bring such a great theological view to the table. I've got to believe that, you know, you've sorted this out. And I was a little scared in the front half of the first hour that maybe I missed the rapture or something. How are you processing this, Chris?
Man, you know, I don't know. Today is. It's funny that you say that North Dakota is getting so much snow. We here in Nashville, we have our first kind of sub 70 degree day that we've had almost all year, at least in the fall so far. So it's finally starting to feel like fall here. I don't remember reading much about a lot of snowfall with the coming of the four horses, but I could have missed. You know, Revelation can be such a tricky book to read. Maybe I missed something there about the interpretation of what those four horses may bring.
I love. Well, for you, I assume with your frame of reference in Nashville, that anytime that's 50 degrees, that it feels like the horsemen are riding for you at that point.
That's exactly right. You know, if we get half an inch, if we get a dusting here in Nashville, you might as well mount one of the four horses of the apocalypse to get anywhere, because people lose their minds.
It's Chris Martin, Millennial Evangelical. Chris, I'd be curious, kidding aside, is this a conversation that's still very important in the evangelical Christian community among, you know, sort of the demographic of the millennial? Because I know growing up, there was so much conversation theologically about end of the world events and how to interpret it. And there was a lot of theological dividing lines drawn based on where you fell on this. Is this still such a heated conversation for the next generation?
Not among the circles that I run in. I don't see a lot. To be quite frank, I think the world has presented a lot of us, especially young people who have kind of come up in a pretty tumultuous time, kind of socially and geopolitically, with a lot more urgent issues to be concerned about than maybe how about the Lord is going to bring about the end of this world. I think a lot of friends and I very much maybe disagree about how the Lord is going to bring the end of this world and remake this world as we know it. And so despite the fact that we disagree on those things, we kind of like agree to disagree in the three tiers of theological issues about which we need to care. You know, there's the first tier, which is the, you know, believing in the virgin birth, believing in the Trinity, inspiration of the Word, those sorts of things. The second tier being maybe what you think about baptism or maybe the Lord's Supper. The second tier issues being ones that you can disagree upon and still, you know, be brothers and sisters in Christ, but the way you do church and maybe the local church you participate in may be different. And then third tier issues being, you know, ones of end time theology or things like that, where, you know, I can go to church with someone who believes very differently about what the end times look like, and we can still be brothers and sisters in Christ in the same church. It's not going to really drastically affect how we, you know, run a church service or even worship together in community. So the issue, I think my hope is, I don't know if this is necessarily true or not, my hope is that young people have maybe understood that and understood that the way you believe about the end times doesn't necessarily need to draw battle lines between you and other believers. And a lot of us, quite frankly, are just more concerned with maybe more social issues or things that may have a more tangible effect on how we live every day than how the Lord's going to bring about the end of days.
Love it, Chris. Super helpful take on how the next generation is thinking about some of these important issues. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, Chris, we'll talk a bit about this really interesting article about some firsthand kind of narrative about a relationship in which the two of them decided not to text while dating and the implications of that. So more to come with Chris Martin of Millennial Evangelical next on Faith Radio Mornings. Welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings. It's about 12 minutes past the hour here, and we're joined in the line by Chris Martin, who writes for MillennialEvangelical.com and many other outlets as he helps us process how the next generation is thinking about matters of faith and matters of church and just life together. And Chris, certainly when I was growing up, if Hallie and I were in our dating relationship, we sort of had to wait until we could call each other on a corded phone on the wall, and maybe our parents would say we could only tie up the phone for 15 minutes at most, and that was the amount of interaction that we might have. We went to separate schools, so I looked forward so much to those 15 minutes at that time. And that's very different than dating now, where sort of in this always on social media culture, people in relationship can be apart but be constantly connected. And yet what I've heard from young people is there's this pressure to always be present. They're never off. They always feel like they have to get back to the text if the person they're dating is maybe texting them. So there's this article about a couple that decided not to text in their relationship. Talk us through this and part of what was going on here.
Yeah, so it sounds to me like, you know, both of them, obviously, because they were kind of normal young adults, had always been texting in their relationships before, both with really good friends, which is often like a fun experience, kind of a diversion to be in group text messages or text messages with friends. It's not really a high pressure situation usually, unless it's a tense relationship. But when you're dating someone and you're in a texting relationship with them, that can be a pretty high stress situation because you feel like you're kind of constantly on a date, and you wonder and you weigh, well, how much time should I be giving this person? How much should I be texting this person on a regular basis? You know, I don't want to seem over the top and clingy, but I also don't want to seem like I'm not interested or ignorant of them. And so where's that happy middle ground? And one couple who published this article about their experience says that they just decided not to do that. They decided that, hey, maybe this isn't a good idea. And so their experience is interesting. And I think beyond their experience, I think it would be a worthwhile endeavor for anyone who might be in a dating, you know, stage of life where they're not married yet and they're dating, whether they're in high school, college, or beyond. You know, I have had a cell phone since I was a freshman in high school when I started playing for the high school football team, so my mom could know when to come pick me up. And so texting has always been a part of a dating relationship for me, and now obviously my married relationship. But yeah, I could definitely see the benefits. You know, with the female in the relationship talks about how it just is draining to always feel like you have to be in constant communication and you're always performing. I think that's I wrote an article one time called "Today's Teens Are Always in the Hallway," and the point was that, you know, in school, social interactions, really the meat of what happens at school beyond academics, happens in the hallway in between classes. And people are bullied in the hallway in between classes. People ask guys or girls on dates in the hallway in between classes. And plans for the weekend are made in the hallway in between classes. And in the 70s, 80s, early 90s, those things happened in the hallways, in between classes, or maybe, like you said, on the phone when everybody got home. Well, nowadays, teens are always in the hallway because they're always having to be socially performing for friends or people that they hope to be more than friends. And so their experience that they shared about dating without texting is a profound one. I think it's worth considering, though logistically could be difficult. Now, they called and talked on the phone, so it's not like they weren't using their phones at all, because that would be really hard nowadays to coordinate anything. But I liked the idea that they kind of promoted that it's a good thing to not always have to be performing for one another, and I think it's worth considering.
Well, and it was interesting, too, just that there's then a bit of sort of the unique factor of being together that makes that time a little bit more special. You begin to anticipate maybe even 24 hours in advance going out on a date because you're just not always in conversation. So you look forward to sharing that time together, kind of catching up, planning for the future in a way that might be different than when you're always connected to one another.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And you have more to talk about. I remember when Susie, my wife, and I, we first started dating, we were friends from eighth grade, and you know, we became friends in eighth grade and have been friends since then. And so when we first started dating early in college, you know, we had been talking and been friends. We knew so much about each other already. We had friends who started dating in college that had to explain their lives to one another when they started dating. And when Susie and I started dating, we already knew each other pretty well the last 5 years of our lives. And so, you know, we were texting because we were normal college students. And it felt like, you know, what do we talk about? We already know each other. The get to know you time was a lot shorter than maybe it was for our friends. And I think the texting element of a relationship can sometimes take away, like you said, Peter, from the time that you actually spend together. It can make it less special. And so if you cooperatively put some fences around how often you're going to talk or the means by which you're going to talk, it can actually make those personal interactions a lot more fruitful and interesting.
It's Chris Martin of MillennialEvangelical.com, who joins us regularly on Faith Radio Mornings and helps us think through just some of the complex and very real situations facing the next generation. Chris, when we come back, I would love to transition our conversation to some of the ways in which the preferences of millennials and what they spend their money on and how they spend their time is really changing a lot of industries in our country, including the headline, "How Millennials Killed Mayonnaise." And there is quite a debate on that. And we'll talk about the many industries that are being impacted by the preferences of millennials next on Faith Radio Mornings. Welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings. We're joined in the line by Chris Martin of MillennialEvangelical.com. And Chris, a pretty interesting article here about how the preferences of millennials really are changing some pretty historic industries in our country. And I saw that Sears is really on the cusp of filing for bankruptcy right now. And that's one of the preferences, right? That millennials just don't shop at department stores like previous generations.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And there's an article that we were kind of talking about together earlier this week, called 18 Industries Which Are Being Killed by Millennials. And it's kind of like a running joke at this point. Like, for a while, unintentionally, there were all kinds of news organizations running articles like, "Millennials are killing blank." And it kind of became like a joke. It's kind of a meme now. I actually have a T-shirt that has like a collage of headlines on it that says all these different things millennials have killed that someone got me for a gift one time. And among the industries are, traditional wedding ceremonies, or beer is one, or casual dining chains like Buffalo Wild Wings or TGI Fridays, mayonnaise, like you said before, or the starter homes market. And then, like you said, also department stores like Macy's and Sears. Reading all of those and remembering other ones that I've heard, like I just saw one this week that millennials are killing American cheese, which, I mean, if there are anything that we're going to kill, I mean, that's one of the better things I suppose we can kill. So I can trace, just looking at those, I can almost trace a few kind of common underlying themes. One, I think millennials are pursuing health food maybe in a way that older generations weren't in when they were younger. So the mayonnaise bit, maybe, you know, they're not going for as condiments that maybe is unhealthy, or they're the American cheese bit. You know, maybe they're just eating fewer cheeseburgers. I don't know. They're not going after American cheese as much. Macy's and Sears department stores. I mean, why would you go to something like that and pay probably more than you need to when you can get something at Amazon? Or maybe, you know, if you're looking for tools, which people would often get at Sears long ago, you can just go to a tool specialized store like a Lowe's or Home Depot. So Sears and Macy's make sense. People are buying things online more than they ever have. Starter homes, a lot of things like that, or like I saw motorcycles or golfing. Millennials are killing golfing. Well, millennials have more student debt than any generation to have come before them. So they aren't buying starter homes because they're renting until they're in their 30s. So they can buy a home that's not a fixer-upper or only has as much room as their apartment does. They're not playing golf because they don't have – golf is an expensive hobby. They don't have the money. They're not buying motorcycles because they don't have the money to buy a car that, you know, isn't a car, buy a vehicle that isn't a car. So I think a lot of these have kind of common undertones. The restaurant bit, millennials are moving faster and wanting to eat at home more because they want to – eat while watching Netflix or something like that. Why would they pay $15, $20 to go eat at Buffalo Wild Wings if they could get Chipotle and eat it with their friends more quickly or at home? So I think there are all kinds of industries that millennials may be killing, whether that's true or not. You know, sometimes people dispute whether or not you can actually attribute it to millennials or not. Regardless, I think there are some common sort of underlying flows that may be causing all of those things to happen.
Well, as you're talking about all this, Chris, I wish you could be joining us in studio, because I'm sitting with two millennials right now, and Rachel Sutton and Logan Roush, and they are nodding their head fervently. They're typing in text messages that, yes, indeed, you really seem to be spot on. I know Rachel is saying she'd much rather shop at Goodwill than at Sears or at Macy's. I will say Logan was a little bit confused by your sort of dissing on American cheese. I think he really likes that, but we just haven't trained him in on the merits of Kerrygold cheddar out of Britain yet. So we got some work to do there, Chris. But I'm curious, in light of all of this, if so much of it at the core is that millennials just aren't making the kind of income out of college that past generations tended to have made. And so some of just the macro consumeristic habits really are changing. I know in my generation growing up, there is the sense you really made it when you finally had a certain level of income, and then you could buy a bunch of consumer goods and show how you made it by how you arranged your house, all of that. This is some of really what's underpinning the change, is definitions of what it means to make it.
Yeah, exactly. Like what it means to make it. I think it could be a good thing depending on how you interpret it. But I think millennials maybe they value stuff less than generations that came before. Like millennials are more like, if they've got some surplus money, they're more likely to maybe donate it or spend it on an experience than save it toward a home, a starter home, or spend it on, you know, like status increasing things that maybe generations before have been tempted to do. So I think, you know, it does make sense to me. Millennials are finding worth more in what they do than what they make, and I think that's valuable.
Chris Martin of MillennialEvangelical.com. Do we see what the impact might this be? You know, I'm 47 years old, and do you have any sort of crystal ball prognostication here in terms of what the world and the shape of the world might look like economically if there really isn't this spending engine that's driven so much wealth creation over the past couple generations?
Yeah, it is going to be interesting. I'm not an economist, so it's hard for me to say, but I think Amazon's going to continue to take over the world. I think that's pretty clear. And until other competitors can come in and kind of start undercutting them on price or on convenience, that their footprint is only going to grow. And I think that's going to have drastic and perhaps negative effects on the economy overall, just based on the simple things that I know about how it works. And then also, I think we're going to have to figure out the student loan issue. I think we're all going to have to come to the realization that college isn't as important as we all think it is. And the demand for college is going to have to go down, and that's going to cause college rates to maybe go down, college prices to maybe go down, which will then maybe help alleviate the student loan problem. But I know student loans really hamstring a lot of people who are around my age, and I think we have to address that problem if we want young people to spend much money nowadays.
I don't know, Chris. I was tracking with you this whole segment, but now you're messing with my livelihood as a college prof here. But, you know, in fairness to your point, it's gotten so expensive, Chris, over these last maybe 10, 15 years. And sometimes I'll say to my students that I can give them every bit of expertise that I may or may not have, but the amount of dollars per hour, it exceeds any other trade or industry that they're paying, just given the extreme amount of tuition that is required.
That's exactly right. I mean, I went to a college that cost $40,000 a year, and I got a great education. It's a private Christian school. Got a great education. It was really fantastic. But I'm exercising expertise outside of my degree area. And I'm not saying what I learned wasn't helpful. It certainly was. I'm a huge fan of what I learned and the experience that I had. But a lot of people, I think, just need to not feel the pressure to go to college and take up being a plumber or being a contractor or things like that. We've defined success for young people as going to college, and I don't necessarily think that's the case for everyone.
Yeah, we'll be in Scotland next week on vacation, my wife and I and daughter, and that's part of the thing we appreciate over there is there isn't the same level of pressure to go to university. There is an identification of what might be important and what might matter, but there's not this sort of crazy gap between the two. Well, Chris, we're out of time. Certainly love just your perspective, what you bring about what's happening in the next generation each week here on Faith Radio Mornings.
Thank you so much for having me. It was good to talk to you.
We'll take a break here for Breakpoint and Bottom of the Hour News. And when we come back for the second half of this hour, we'll be joined by Dr. Dale Gentry. And we'll talk a little bit about some of the reports on the effects of climate change that are coming out here globally in our world. So more to come on Faith Radio Mornings. Always interesting from Breakpoint, and I appreciate that idea of having a consistent ethic of life across levels. So, yes, to be pro-life on infants and fetuses and abortion is one side of this, but so is, too, just the dignity and sanctity of life overall when it comes to topics like euthanasia and social justice. The question really in front of us all, I think, is do all lives matter regardless of the stage of life? And to have that kind of consistent ethic is an important invitation from Breakpoint. So I hope you enjoyed that. I am looking across the studio right now from Dr. Dale Gentry, who has come on Faith Radio a few different times to talk about different scientific issues, and we are going to address the tricky conversation on climate change today. So I'm sure that this will bring some polarization, and we'll do our best to navigate all of the difficult steps in this journey. So more to come with Dale Gentry next on Faith Radio Mornings. Yesterday on Faith Radio Mornings, we were joined by our Wednesday guest, Bill English of BibleandBusiness.com. And he was talking about when you're in these hard situations of firing an employee, that it really is hard for both the employer and the employee, especially as believers.
You have to understand that God is in control. God is sovereign. If you have been terminated, that's God's indication that he's moving you along to something else. No need to get angry at your employer. These burning bridges are always based in the soil of anger and potentially revenge, right? And you just don't want to live there. That's not how you want to have a relationship. That's not what God calls us to. So for some of the relationships that we've had to terminate recently, at Platinum at least, we come back around and we offer consulting contracts to help them finish up some of their work and maybe to not cherry pick, but to grab some of their core competencies and use them in the future on a consulting basis. If we do happen to terminate somebody within a particular engagement that we're on, we'll see if there's another engagement we can invite them into at some point in the future, just to let them know that this was only about that engagement. It wasn't about them as a person.
Always helpful advice from Bill English at BibleandBusiness.com. If you want to catch our entire segment from yesterday's show, in which we talked a lot about how to do separation from organization well, not burning bridges, be kind and caring for one another, you can go to MyFaithRadio.com and search for Bill English or BibleandBusiness.com. Well, Dale Gentry is in studio. He's a professor here at the University of Northwestern St. Paul. And we're going to talk about a report that came out of the United Nations here recently about the potential impact that 1 degree of warmth globally may have just on our environment and on our way of life. So Dale Gentry next on Faith Radio Mornings.
The internet brings all sorts of good things into our lives. And for the most part, our kids haven't known anything but an internet-connected life. Hi, I'm Mark Gregston with Parenting Today's Teens. Though we know the upsides of the internet, I'm sure you're all too aware of the downsides as well. I'm thinking about the issue of pornography and its availability in abundance. For a son or daughter who's grown up with access to the web, searching for inappropriate pictures is easy and common. This is a deep issue and deserves attention on your part, Mom and Dad. Perhaps start by having an honest conversation with your kid. Maybe put the computer in the living room instead of a child's bedroom. But whatever you do, take advantage of the benefits of the internet and don't be blindsided by the problems it can create.
Want to hear Mark in person? For a list of upcoming events, go to parentingtodaysteens.org.
It's 19 minutes before the top of the hour here on Faith Radio Mornings. I'm your host, Peter Kapsner, and delighted to be joined in studio by Dale Gentry, who teaches here at the University of Northwestern St. Paul, our headquarters, where we're broadcasting from. Good morning, Dale.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so remind our listeners again the kinds of things that you teach, what you're involved with at this point.
Yeah, I'm an environmental scientist very broadly. My specialty is actually mostly in wildlife biology, but you know, the nature of small colleges, I end up teaching in anything related to the environment and God's creation.
So do you get to take students on these really cool trips, different places around the world to study biology? I mean, that seems like a cover to me, Dale, for doing what you want to do.
You're calling me out, and it's a pretty fair assessment. Yeah, I have been fortunate to take students to Ecuador and to Costa Rica, and hopefully African trip coming up here within a year or so. But yeah, it's a great opportunity to let people get out and see what God's creation looks like outside of Minnesota.
Oh, I've got to believe the biodiversity when you go to places like Ecuador and Costa Rica. It's got to just be marvelous to see.
It is. It floors you. Really, it can be kind of an emotional experience to just let your heart rate get up first time you go out, walk through a forest and hear a howler monkey, recognizing your presence is pretty special.
Oh, that's so great. Well, be curious, we wanted to have you on the program. There is some news coming out this week from the United Nations report on climate change. And obviously we know, and those of us that are listening this morning, this really can be a polarizing issue. People have very, very loud opinions on this one. And so we'll do our best to kind of navigate the middle road here. But some of the reports that came out was that if the world temperature increased by an average of 1 degree, we would really see some catastrophic impacts. So before getting into the merits of that, what kind of modeling do these scientists do to try to make these kind of prognostications?
Yeah, this is, I think some of the controversy around this is just in the complexity of the modeling. It's all mathematical modeling, and so it's, it's slight nuances in those models can create different results and outputs, and that's where they're easy to pick apart. But I think they're mostly valid. So they input all the data they've got and see what spits out. But it's not just that they use them in the past. So we create this model. This is what it tells us about the future. Let's see what would happen if we use this exact same model to predict things in the past. So go back 10 years, apply it to the conditions at that time, and see if it would have predicted accurately what we know to have been true over the past 10 years. So if it doesn't work for what's happened over the past 10 years, they throw it out and say, okay, that didn't work. But if it does predict it accurately, then they say, maybe we can put more confidence in this model looking forward. So there is some room to criticize them, but it's not just sort of throwing numbers at a wall and hoping, seeing what sticks.
Yeah, I mean, to suggest that it's all fake news on one side seems to be inappropriate. To suggest that it's locked in and this is the way everything's going to be on the other side would also be so to recognize that there are some merits to the science, that there's some merits to really be in these conversations seems terribly important. I mean, at the very least, I think we can suggest that humans do have an impact on the environment. If we get out of the warming conversation, I'm sure you've seen it on some of your trips, just the impact of deforestation, for example, or I know that my house is covered by Japanese beetles every fall,
right.
And that wasn't indigenous to Minnesota at
right.
first. And
right.
so we can't deny that humans do impact the environment.
Yeah, 100%. You know, that's a long, long list of species that have gone extinct because of our actions. The negative impacts of pollution, the unintended consequences of introducing things from around the world. You know, we're dealing with emerald ash borer and in Minnesota, other similar related issues. And this shouldn't surprise us. I think theologically, if you go back into Genesis 3, it says, because of sin, cursed is the ground because of you. And so, I actually think that Genesis warns us that our sin and the fallenness of this world is going to have negative impacts on the surroundings. And so, I don't think we can suggest that no harm will come because of our presence.
Do we have some precedent from past sort of predictions that scientists have made relative to what the impact might be on something? I mean, I think I go all the way back to sort of the hole in the ozone layer that was part of a big push when I was growing up.
Yeah.
I mean, what kind of precedent do we have where scientists will posit this is the likely outcome and consequence of our existing actions if we don't shift that? Do we see some precedent that they've been pretty spot on in some of these things?
Yeah, sure. Certainly there. It's been, depending on which field we want to examine, for example, you mentioned Japanese beetles, that whenever we introduce these invasive species, if they grab a foothold, they almost always cause harm. Some of the consequences of deforestation, which you've mentioned, have been surprising on local climates. We've discovered sometimes in the absence of forests, we've actually changed the local climate by losing precipitation because those trees aren't there doing their thing and putting humidity in the environment anymore. And so, yeah, you know, and I'm heavily biased here and probably the wrong person to ask, but I would say as a scientist, yes, science is a pretty effective way at understanding how things are going to play out into the future.
Well, and part of it is in our view of our environment in terms of, I know that when we've lived in a capitalistic, consumeristic kind of environment, mm-hmm. that we view our environment as the potentiality of the resource it offers us.
Yeah.
But I don't see a lot of evidence in the biblical text that all of the environment is a resource to be used by us for whatever means and reason we might want to use it.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, I think the Bible makes clear that we are here to use it. Our depiction is as farmers, you know, and when we look at, you know, the pre-fall account in the first chapter of Genesis. And so, when we're called to steward and have dominion over the earth, that's a good thing. It doesn't mean we're supposed to just sit back and let it be natural. We are supposed to make fruitful use of these resources, but that, if people interpret that as do whatever you want with it, that's too far. There's got to be moderation here. The call to steward it, in sort of as God would have us do means we have to make wise decisions. That means there needs to be discernment. That means we need to sometimes have some sense of this is too far. You know, like, can we plow the fields to turn it into farms? Yes. Should we plow all of the prairie to turn it into farms? No. We should leave some of it as natural habitat. So there's a lot of wiggle room in there. We need some wise discernment.
Talking about the climate change report coming out of the United Nations here with Dr. Dale Gentry from the University of Northwestern St. Paul, broadly an environmental scientist, and really helpful to get some insight into this. Dale, when we come back from break, lots more that we can get into on this conversation. And I'd just be curious, just to get your thoughts on some of the attitudes maybe that are changing among the next generation, what you've seen during your time of teaching and what we might see in the future relative to millennials and stewardship of our environment. Welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings. We're joined by Dr. Dale Gentry, and we're talking about the UN report on climate change. And Dale has certainly worked at Northwestern St. Paul here for quite a while, has led trips around the world to some of these places that just have this beautiful biodiversity. And Dale, I'm thinking about my 8-year-old son, Simon, who's listening right now, that would probably love to hang in the jungle for maybe the better part of a month or so. What's one of the coolest things you've seen as you've been sort of in the midst of these relatively uninhabited places?
Yeah, you know, it's, I always tell my students, you really have to take advantage of this. If you ever are presented with the opportunity to walk through a rainforest, it's a very different experience. Everything's a little bit tenuous. The first time I went there, one of the leaders just said, just don't touch anything. And I'm like, what do you mean don't touch anything? And he's like, there's just too many poisonous things and sharp. And it's just, you know, in Minnesota forest, I don't feel that way at all. You know, I can just kind of tromp through there at will. But when I was in Costa Rica a couple of years ago, we sort of drove through this awful 20-mile road and ended up at this extinct volcano that had filled in with rainwater. And so we literally got to go swimming in a volcano cone, and it's surrounded by this pristine rainforest. We're hearing toucans and howler monkeys and capuchin monkeys sort of calling from the woods. And we're just, you know, sort of taking a dip. It was amazing, really remarkable experience.
Well, it had to be phenomenal. And I saw some headlines coming out of the sort of Australia, Tasmania neck of the woods this last week that mm-hmm. they discovered sort of this lost world beneath the surface off the coast of Tasmania, these mountainous regions. And what they said is they were just amazed at how the waters were teeming with life. And it really brought to mind sort of this Genesis account of, you know, when the waters were first filled and just teeming with life. And I think it does, there has to be sort of the sense of wonder that happens when you're in these, again, not impacted areas by human beings, where you see maybe at least a little glimpse, however, through a glass darkly, of what creation might have been like.
Yeah, it really is a special experience. You know, you see in Psalms 19 or in Romans 1:20, where it just talks about how creation exists to glorify God. And so when you have that experience and you're awed by the place that you are and the circumstances that lead it to being as wondrous as it is, it really is, it's something that for me has drawn me closer to God.
And in your teaching life, Dale, have you seen some attitudes shift? I mean, I know I see some of the headlines that millennials are far more concerned with environmental matters maybe than past generations. Has that rung true? Has that played out in the classroom with you and some of your students?
I think so, yeah. I've been here for almost 10 years, and so that's not a huge sample size. But even in the time I've been here, I do a survey on the first day of class every time I teach environmental science. And there has been a pretty noteworthy shift in whether they perceive climate change as a concern or not, you know, and so not to say that everybody does, but percentage wise that there is a change. I was just discussing with a colleague yesterday about how as we're introducing composting on campus and the challenges of helping people understand what goes in there and what doesn't. And I said, you know, 30 or 40 years ago, we all had a hard time recycling aluminum cans, and that is second nature now. And so I think that some of these things that are no-brainers, you know, I can take something that's waste and garbage and turn it into something useful. That makes sense, but it just takes a little, you know, we have to get over the hump of figuring out how to do it and why to do it, and then it sits in and we say, okay, this makes sense, let's do it.
Yeah, I need to sit in your class. I'm never sure if it's banana peels or coffee grounds or how much grass or newspaper to put in the compost. But boy, you sure get a rich soil by the time you're done when it goes through that process.
We do, yep, all the above, yeah. So we're excited to be introducing more of those initiatives. You know, sustainability is kind of a cliche, but these initiatives that are just, I think, common sense, good actions. Let's produce less waste. Let's make use of those things that would otherwise be considered waste. And so, you know, we're making good progress on campus.
And are you able to help students sort of fight through what is the politicization of all this? It's so political. I mean,
it
at
is.
The end of the
yep.
day, I mean, there's so much of the energy about this has to do with politics. And you kind of help them recognize that that's really where a lot of the energy is coming from and how we can carve out just a common sense way forward.
Yeah, I do. We try and go through that. And I hope with some success. And we can actually make a lot of sense out of it. With, for example, climate change, and I think some of these criticisms are valid. Most of the solutions that are mentioned for climate change are things like taxing carbon, regulating emissions. Those are all kind of big government type of solutions. And so I think that explains the Republican reticence to say climate change is a big problem if the solutions are all, you know, embracing more governmental oversight. And so helping them make sense out of those relationships, not that I understand it or know it all perfectly, and I try and come into it humbly and say, look, I'm not going to tell you what to believe or why to believe it, but let's just have an open discussion and a kind of a cliche, also a safe place to have this discussion, and usually helps people make sense out of what's going on. Excuse me.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Well, we have just a little bit less than a minute left. This is a much bigger topic, but mm-hmm. I just have to at least ask the question. At the end of the day, I can feel so disempowered as one of 7 billion people on this earth. Does it really matter that I'm rolling down my recycle bin to the end of my driveway every Wednesday morning? Because it just feels like a drop in the bucket.
It does. Yeah. No, I think it does matter. You know, and it's, I can understand the disenfranchisement. We say the same thing with voting sometimes. You know, does my one vote really matter? But, you know, from a bigger perspective, from a gospel perspective, you could say the same thing. Does my sharing the good news about Jesus matter? But it certainly does. Everything that each one of us has a specific calling and a purpose given to us by God. And doing those things, small things, cumulatively make big differences.
Well, thanks so much for coming on Faith Radio Mornings this morning. We love your voice on these topics that are otherwise pretty tricky, but it feels like a voice of sanity and reason in the midst of us. So thanks for joining
Great.
Us this morning.
Yep. Happy to be here.
We'll take a break here and wrap up our show for the day here on the 11th of October. Well, I have to say, after listening to Dale Gentry this morning, that I'm very jealous about the profession and discipline that he's chosen to be a professor in. I think this idea that you get to take students on trips to the jungle and into some of these wonderful uninhabited places in this world, I think I really made a mistake in this practical theology deal. It doesn't ever take me to really cool places like that, but appreciate his insight and just his ability to walk through what is otherwise a really tricky conversation that has so many of us divided. Kind of conversation we want to have here regularly on Faith Radio Mornings, where we're not going to be discipled by Fox News or CNN or some of the polarizing outlets in our country. We want to stay fixed with our eyes on Jesus, pay attention to the text, and keep walking out this journey together, united in our faith. So thanks for listening again, everybody, here on Faith Radio Mornings.
Again, thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings. You can hear other podcasts at myfaithradio.com. Plus, remember, we are listener-supported, so your support makes Faith Radio Mornings and the other programs from Faith Radio possible. Make your gift at myfaithradio.com.